The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Open phones on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Had a great conversation there with Kevin B. Smith. The Jailer's Reckoning, How Mass Incarceration is Damaging America. And Sheriff Nate Sickler popped me a message during the break here. And he actually had a pretty interesting comment on this one. Sheriff, thank you for sending this to me. He said, if counties had adequate jail space, judges could sentence them locally to save money. But then locally, it would cost more. Does this book take into account the cost of the crime committed? Well, I'm not all the way through it yet, Sheriff, but I have a feeling there may be some talk about it. It's mostly the cost of the incarceration more than anything else. But that would be interesting to have a system that instead of state correctional facilities, you end up having more, you know, jails regionally, you know, perhaps a Jackson and Josephine County prison system. And then, you know, maybe you have a Douglas and Eugene kind of, you know, combining those sort of things where you are keeping offenders closer to the community. And I guess you wouldn't have the economy of scale, though, with multiple prisons. I don't know. I have to maybe I have to have you come in and talk about that some morning, Sheriff. All right. And we'll dig into it more. Irish Angie is here. 770-5633. You want to talk? And Irish Angie, you had a story, you know, about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to tell you the story in connection with this last interview there.
Yeah.
I was in the Isle of Man. I'm 67, so you know, this is 30 years ago. I was in the Isle of Man with my kids, and we were staying in a hotel, and one of the people working in the hotel, robbed everybody's jewelry in the room, and he was an Irish guy. He was actually a nice guy, but anyway, got to know him and everything. So they put him on the street, and they whacked him, for robbing the jewelry.
They whacked him, you said?
Oh yeah,
they killed him.
They gave him so many whacks, with a stick or whatever.
They whacked him as in like they paddled him or used the cane, something like that. Oh,
yeah. I think it was more than a bit of a cane. I think, he wasn't very well after it, but he that's what they did. They put him, he went to the judge. The judge gave him so many whack, paddles or whatever. And he was sent packing. He was deported back to Ireland. And he had to give all the jewelry back, of course.
Yeah.
But that's how they dealt with it. But there was no crime in the Isle of Man at the time. None.
Interesting. So punishment apparently was very swift, and it was corporal punishment. It was physical punishment, per se, right?
Right, which made me believe, when you said it wouldn't be acceptable for Americans. Yeah, the Americans would accept that if it was going to solve a problem.
All right.
To pay their
yeah, I find that's very interesting. It's very thought provoking. Wow. Yeah. Do the crime, get a whack. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Appreciate the call. Good hearing from you, by the way. My favorite Irish brogue on the radio. That is for sure. Let me go to Matt. Hey, Matt, go ahead.
Hey, love that interview.
Glad you did. Thanks.
Of course, my favorite part was you said, is the reason we have more Trump supporters in prison is because Trump is a convicted felon now.
Well, it's there. Now, I think it's a BS conviction myself, but still, technically, yeah, he's a convicted felon at this point in time. He hasn't been sentenced there, but yikes. What do you think, though, about the cost of incarceration, though, actually affecting society in a negative fashion? Not just the financial cost of it, but the actual social cost in cohesion.
Having not read his book, I don't want to come across as unfair. I think I'm a lot of where you are. I think there are some people that just have to be put away from society because they've shown that they can't be trusted living alongside their fellow man. And I don't know what else you do other than to remove them from society.
Mm-hmm. One challenge that you get to is that we're in this weird world now of DEI in which they talk about disparate impact. So if you have someone of a certain race or ethnicity or gender, whatever it is, who ends up getting more punishment, it's never because they did more crime or caused more trouble. It's always because there's racism involved. And that's been affecting the criminal justice system right now. Now, it's just absolutely ridiculous because everyone knows, just historically you look at it, that certain peoples have higher rates of crime than others. All right. And let's be honest. That really nice Japanese couple down the street, for the most part, is not causing trouble. Let's be honest about it. And everybody knows it.
I wanted to give you a number. And I don't know if you and I had ever talked about this before, but a friend of mine who worked in juvenile corrections, he told me this probably 12 years ago. I said, what's the actual percentage of kids that you see? So this is younger than 18.
Yeah.
That are just always going to be in the system. He says, I'll give you the exact number. It's 30%.
That's a lot. 30%
of the kids that I see are wired wrong. They come from functional families. They're not, you know, their parents aren't drug abusers. These kids are not psychopaths, sociopaths. They literally have no sense of right and wrong. He said, so they will continue to make the same mistakes that they've always made. And he goes, and we just, you know, we know who they are after we see them a couple times. We're like, well, you know, little Billy here, he's going to be a problem for the rest of his life. And I think maybe the question is, what do you do about that 30%? That's your recidivism, you know, the people who were in there forever.
And maybe that was the purpose of when Great Britain, when London, or England rather, had Australia as the penal colony, right? We just send you there. Go away. Figure it out.
It gets to that point. I don't know what else you do. I'm sure some of your other callers have opinions, but he did that for 20 years, and he said it's 30% year after year after year after year. 30% of the kids that get into trouble with us are going to be in this system their entire life. They're just wired wrong.
Yeah. All right. Good call. Thanks for that, as always. Ed's here. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
I'm excellent. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. You want to throw a log on the conspiracy fire? Go ahead.
Well, I listened to your interview with the author of that book, and I sit there, and I went and I did some quick research on it, and I sent you the articles. But, you know, you were totally correct when you said there had to be other factors.
Yeah, the guy was not sent to prison for stealing the tuna sandwich, right?
No, and that's the, obviously, the material part of this we have to consider, because he wasn't sent to prison for stealing the sandwich, because after he stole the sandwich, the charge was he was threatening the security guard with a knife. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if that part of the story is omitted, you get a lot more traction out of it.
And by the way, he did admit that in the book. I should have made that clear. Okay. And I should have said that. And that's why I just said there was more to it than just stealing it. But, you know, a lot of times criminal justice reform people always like to use those kind of statements to garner sympathy. And frankly, that's the way the Kim Kardashians were when they went and lobbied Trump for that right on crime bullshtein that ended up being done in the last Trump administration. And, you know, it's like, oh, well, they're just marijuana users. And then you find out, well, no, frankly, they're dopers and drug dealers, and there's a lot of violence connected with some of these people. But yet they cut them loose anyway.
Well,
you know,
this is, it's all connected to a condition of acceptance. You tell the story the right way and you get people who don't want to do the research to understand mm-hmm. what really happened.
And he didn't hide that. I want to be clear that,
I'm not saying he did.
Okay.
I'm not saying he hid it. I'm saying when you hear the story with that part omitted, there's a perception that, well, there was an injustice done, but truly, was there an injustice done is what you have to say if you consider the whole story. Because, you know, we live in a society. Do you want to be in a line for a sandwich and have a guy pull a knife and start threatening people?
No. Most people would say no.
The point at which, yeah, because it, you know, he would have had to been convicted of, I would believe, that it would have been a felony.
He had had many other convictions. It is worth talking about, though. What I think he brings up in the book that is worth talking about is the style of remote warehousing of prisoners, you know, conducive to helping keep contact with family and keep someone to the point where maybe we could rehabilitate better. There's a case to be made that maybe we could do that differently.
Well, I would agree with you. And I, you know, that part of it, to me, needs to be brought about on a different level, not using an example that you have, you know, you can suspect, you know, not the correct information and thus a different outcome.
Yeah.
And when you look at everything it is, it's basically conditionally one of these movements towards this restorative justice. It's like going to the kids who bring guns to school, who
and doing everything to keep them and doing everything you can to keep them in school rather than a really swift, harsh punishment, which is really what's needed.
Exactly.
You know, to stop it. And needs to be some aversion therapy. Ed, always thoughtful. You know that. Thank you, my friend. 770-5633. We got open phones on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. We could talk about this, anything else on your mind there, too. But I did find the criminal justice conversation pretty interesting. The book is thought-provoking. Like I said, I don't agree with everything there, but I can see some kernels of real wisdom in what Kevin Smith is talking about, too. So I do recommend the book. I really do. And, you know, rarely do I agree, you know, totally with what an author is all about. But, you know, you take the good. And maybe get rid of some of the stuff that's not so good in your opinion, all right? But if you're on hold, I'll get right to you. 770-5633 on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Up to it.
Joel here from Mother Ford and Truck Center, and I got a couple unbeatable Joel specials on Ford trucks this month.
Number one, at their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish. Open phones continue on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, 770-5633. Francine is here. Hello, Francine. Go ahead. Hey, Francine, it might help if I push the button. There you go, Francine. Hi.
Hi, Bill. Your guest talking about the prison system and the cost of incarcerating people.
Yes.
I think some of the things that bring the cost up so high are the special treatments that are being given to certain prisoners. Mm. Things like transgender surgeries and so forth. And
you could be right.
I mean,
at least in Oregon,
you know, they need, they need to back down on, you know, cut back on that sort of thing. I didn't really want to get too involved, but I just wanted to point that out. But I actually called because it's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Mm-hmm. That my conspiracy revolves around Joe Biden and the baby bites.
Okay.
Okay. So, but it's actually kind of a little bit dark, maybe. But you know, obviously he forgets where he is sometimes. But you know, you can look it up and see that this has been going on with him for a long, long time in public.
You know, are you kind of going down this road that maybe he thinks he's at that what is that Bohemian Grove thing, and they got the owl up there, and he's, you know, biting and chewing on babies. You know, it's kind of like the Alex Jones blood eating baby thing, or what?
Possibly, or it could be like even darker, like, you know, the satanic Illuminati. What do they call that? Omichrome, or what is that stuff?
Adenochrome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I think he forgets where he is, and he's just so, he gets really triggered when he sees a baby and he can't help but want to start chomping on it or something.
Instead of Yosemite Sam, remember Yosemite Sam in Ballot Box Bunny? I love babies.
Oh, yes.
Give me babies. Yeah. Let me kiss baby. It's like it would be Yosemite Sam would be eating that baby, right? Eating the baby. I love babies. I eat babies.
Yeah, Yosemite Joe.
Yosemite Joe. I love it. That's funny. Let me go to Jerry. Hey, Jerry, how you doing this morning? You wanted to comment on that guest, too. Go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering if your guest or his book referred to anything to, like, the Chuck Colson Prison Fellowship.
Oh, in other words, trying to redirect, in other words, directing prisoners into a faith-based program of some sort.
Hmm? And it's remarkably successful. And you change somebody's heart, and that's how you do it.
Well, I haven't gone through the entire book yet, and I'll take a look and see if he does. I don't know if he spends as much of the book on the actual reforms necessary. I think he's pointing out the cost or the damage that he thinks is being done to society and trying to raise the issue like, hey, you know, there are trade-offs for everything we're doing here, and mass incarceration is a trade-off. But yeah, it is remarkably successful, like what you were talking about, those kind of programs, because it gets you out of yourself, for one thing. Get you out of yourself and thinking about a higher purpose, I guess, right?
Yeah, and you know, you think somebody who's involved with drugs or something like that, you put them in society with their same old friends and acquaintances, and of course they're going to relapse.
Exactly. You're just hanging out with the same people that cause the trouble. Good point. Let me go to Lucretia. Hey, Lucretia, you want to talk? Take that back. Hang on. I think Lucretia's here. Okay, I just want to get the right number. I got full, all the buttons are blinking this morning, Lucretia. What's on your mind, huh?
Oh, hey, Bill, next time Francine calls, you've got to get her to sing the song, We're Going to the Dog Park.
Okay.
You have to get her to do it. Okay. All
right.
What I want to talk about that people don't know, in 1913, Nobel Prize in Medicine was given to Charles Robert Rickett, R-I-C-H-E-T.
Mm-hmm.
He was a head of a physiologist at the College of France and immunology. He was a proponent of eugenics and presided over the French Eugenics Society towards the end of his life. What he got the Nobel Prize for is that he figured out if he put small amounts of toxins, whatever, it could be human fetus cells, it could be aluminum, it could be some albumin from eggs or milk proteins. He said it would create anaphylactic reactions. He said even these reactions even include your allergies. So you put a little bit of mold and that type of thing, or the aluminum, you know, that now we're getting in the environment, it's causing people to have way more reaction to that toxicity. And he called them anaphylactic, and like I said, he even included that. But the Pharma Insider also added, it's impossible to vaccinate for anything. And Rickett has demonstrated conclusively and was given the Nobel Prize for it because he figured out how to poison everybody by sensitizing them to the most commonly occurring things in the environment.
That's a very interesting, well, it kind of makes you wonder then, if I, not that I'm going to agree necessarily with this theory, but it does give you wonder with the amazing amount of children now, A, with either autism and B, with allergies. And do you remember when I was growing up here, Lucretia, nobody had a peanut allergy in school. Nobody.
Right.
And I know it's just a little small thing. It's like now it's like we have peanut allergies, we have gluten intolerances, and frankly, I don't make enough money to have dietary restrictions, so I kind of work around that anyway. But hey, it's an interesting theory. It makes you wonder. Appreciate the call. Let me go to Jerry. Jerry Greg's in Shady Cove. Hello, Greg.
There we go. Back onto the judicial system.
Go ahead.
And a conspiracy thought. I'm wondering, has Oregon been invaded by the aliens that are possibly taking over cities and complexes? Because you usually see that kind of stuff in Ohio, but we haven't seen that on the news in Oregon. Are they just keeping that a secret?
Okay, what kind of aliens, which aliens do you see taking us over right now?
Oh, gosh. I'll take the Somalians or whatever, the Africans or whatever they call that. That was in Ohio, the news there. The illegals.
Oh, the Haitians. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing from outer space, because those are the more friendly ones.
Oh, those are friendlier aliens, right? Until they want to eat you, though, or impregnate your wife.
Well, yeah, the late night lizards. Yeah. I'll let you go there. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I love it. I'll grab one more. By the way, I wanted to let you know that before I get to the next call, Steve Kirsch. Remember Steve Kirsch, the high-tech guy who... I forget how I talked when I talked with him. It was a while back. It was during the COVID stuff. Steve Kirsch finally ended up getting another high-tech guy or another millionaire to pony up $500 million. $500,000 each they put in a pot. And Steve Kirsch and this other guy are going to debate if the COVID vaccines killed more people than they helped during the COVID time in the United States. And apparently that debate is going to be occurring later in November. And I'll tell you more about that when we get a little closer to it. I just saw on Steve Kirsch's Substack yesterday that he's going to go there. That's kind of a sideline of what Lucretia was talking about. All right. Hello, line three. You're the final one before we do the Diner 62 quiz. Who's this? Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. It's Deplorable Patrick.
Deplorable Patrick hit a home run here. You're batting cleanup then, all right?
Oh, wow. But
you're batting cleanup for the Dodgers, all right?
I think the bat is already broken. Oftentimes I'm only able to listen with one ear while I'm at work. Not today, but a lot.
Yeah.
And you've talked a lot about the Senate Bill 100 and how much it's damaged the people. And what I don't know is there any talk about getting rid of it?
There has been talk about getting rid of it, but no one has seriously taken an attack to want to put an attack. Because I don't think that the state legislature is wishing to do this, because the state legislature likes Senate Bill 100 and sustainable development and having state agencies in charge of where and when anybody can build. We're the only state that does this. It would have to come from the people, and until people see enough damage coming their way, I don't think anything changes. There's not enough groundswell of opposition yet. Okay?
Yeah, groundswell is what would be required, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Of course, I was thinking of things like tar and feather would also be nice to apply for some. But
I haven't heard anything more much at all about this IP3 initiative, Petition 3, that would make it illegal to use animals for food. Did that go away?
Yeah, that went away. It did not get the support for it. So even even in the crazy gangrene animal right wacko world, even that was looked at as overly extreme. Overly extreme. Okay? All right.
Thank you. Thanks so much for the program.
All right. Always a pleasure. Diner 62 quiz in a matter of seconds. Jump on it, 770-563-3770-KMED. If you haven't won this in the last 60 days, you can win it next. We'll have fun with it. I said we'll have fun with it. That means something else has to happen. You'll have fun with it. Call now.
Rev up your engines, folks. American Wrencher
Glit Boxes. I'm Bill London, KMED News.
844, the amazing ascent in gold and silver prices. You know what I think is going on here? It's that the markets are still saying that. You know, as much as in, and as important as it is, when we're talking about the Republicans and the Democrats voting for their people, neither side's really going to have a plan to fix the budget. It is not, all right? And I think what you're continuing to see here in the price of physical gold and silver is the inflation play. And there's going to be more. I know people are talking about whipping inflation. We're going to end it and this and that and the other. I don't know. Awful lot of rice bowls would have to be broken. They're probably going to have to print somehow because it's their support in Congress to break the rice bowls. I would venture not, all right? And because of this reality, think about physical gold and silver for yourself to protect a part of your portfolio from the raging inflation that will continue to bubble underneath us, even though they claim that inflation's not so bad right now. Unless you're buying things, okay? All right. Jay Austin & Company, Gold and Silver Buyers, Ashland, 1632 Ashland Street is where you go. Talk with Mark or Andre or any of the other crew there. They're good people. They know these markets. They've been helping people protect their portfolio for years and years and years, okay? Now, I'm not a financial guy. I just talk with a lot of them. So talk with yours and then talk with Jay Austin & Company, all right? 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass, and that's by appointment. Call 482-3715. And, you know, when you look at the central banks continuing to buy gold hand over fist, and even Russia now buying silver, which has been leading to a pop in that, yeah, it's more for than just silver for solar panels. Okay, gang, let's talk about that. Jay Austin & Company in Ashland and Grants Pass. JayAustinBrokers.com, FortuneReserve.com.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by
KMED.
8:47. Now time for the Diner 62 Real American Quiz. Diner 62, by the way. Clam Chowder Friday tomorrow. Remember that. So good you'll hear the surf and the seagulls. And a half ham special for $11.15. Monday through Friday, 6 to 9. That's really good ham steak they have. All your hearty breakfast favorites and more. Omelets, skillets, waffles, biscuits and gravy, chicken fried steak, cinnamon roll, French toast, you name it. And why are we using the theme from the Avengers from the 1960s? I don't know. I'm just thinking about this. When I'm thinking about jewel heists and capers and things, I can't help but think of John Steed and Emma Peel fighting the bad guys back in the day. So we're going to talk with Jack about that. Hey, Jack, how you doing this morning? Welcome.
I'm doing good, Bill.
All right. Jack, today we're talking about this week in history, 1964, the jewel heist of the century. A couple of men broke into the American Museum of Natural History in New York, and they made off with millions of dollars in jewels today, 1964. Now, the theft was the largest jewel heist in U.S. history. Among the 24 gems stolen by Allen Dale Kuhn, who's a 26-year-old, Jack Roland Murphy, also known as Murph the Surf. He was a 27-year-old. They stole the Star of India and the Midnight Star, the largest sapphire and black sapphire in the world, respectively. Also stolen was the DeLong Star Ruby, considered to be the world's most perfect ruby. So, Jack, this was a big deal, as you could imagine. Now, security at the American Museum was comically lax. Murphy and Kuhn were able to enter the museum. They just climbed a fence and a fire escape. And once they were on the fire escape, they tied a rope to a pillar above one of the windows. And they used a glass cutter and duct tape to break into three display cases. And then they used a squeegee to collect all the loot while the batteries had been out in the display's alarms for months. I guess the batteries were dead in it. So the guys were eventually caught, Jack. What ended up leading to the jewel thieves' capture? Was it A, a fist fight on the street? Was it B, a really generous tip in a restaurant? Was it B, one of them went out and bought a really expensive vehicle? Was it D, a lavish party? Or was it E, the sighting of a streaker that led to the arrest of the jewel heist people? What was it?
Say they got in a fist fight out in the street.
Yeah, fist fight, arguing about how they're going to split it up. Nah, it wasn't that, Jack. I'm sorry. We're going to go to Tom. Tom's going to take a stab at this. So we're talking about these jewel heist of the century people here, Tom, and it's not the fist fight. What tipped everybody off? Was it a generous tip at a restaurant, a purchase of a luxury vehicle, a lavish party, or the sighting of a streaker?
How about the purchase of a luxury vehicle?
Luxury vehicle. Went out and bought a really expensive car. That's pretty good. No, it wasn't that either. All right. Hello, John. Wasn't the vehicle. So it's either a super big tip at a restaurant, a lavish party, or the sighting of a streaker. How do they get caught?
I'm gonna try for the lavish party.
You're thinking the lavish party, all right? Well, it's a good day for you.
You're a winner!
You got it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Despite the young age and criminal inexperience of Murphy and Kuhn, they didn't leave much at the scene. No fingerprints, but they celebrated. This is what happened. Plainclothes cop got word from an informant that Kuhn, Murphy, and a getaway car driver, Roger Clark, had thrown a big party at a hotel not far from the Natural History of Museum. They didn't even get out of the neighborhood. Can you believe that? Right? And the informant told the detective, I think I got something for you. There are guys upstairs in this place. They're spending money like wild. You'd think they were making it with a machine. And so detectives got a search warrant for the hotel suite, and they found marijuana, a floor plan of the museum, books on gemstones. Clark walks in while the police were searching the room and informed the cop that Kuhn and Murphy had fled to Florida. Kuhn and Murphy were eventually captured and arrested, and the three men were convicted. 3 years in Riker is where they ended up serving. And Murphy said, for us, it wasn't anything. You know, we just swung in there and took the stuff. The story of the heist was made into the movie Murph the Surf, also known as Live a Little, Steal a Lot. So there we go, John. And no stealing. You're just going to go for free over at Diner 62, okay? Hang on. We're going to get you all.
Thank you.
You bet. Get you all set up. This is the Bill Myers Show on KMED 99.3 KBXC. We'll do another quiz probably Tuesday next week.
When you call Fontana Roofing, our singular
PAC-319.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Got something on your mind? Give Bill a shout at 541-770-5633. 770-KMED.
It's 8:54. Our quick email of the day, sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry. While you wait, crowns. They got an in-house lab now. Pretty cool stuff. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. It's right next to Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant on Freeman Way, okay? Bob Hayworth writes, Bill, I have a nephew incarcerated in state prison in Lakeview. This is on the jailing question we were talking about. His crime was having child porn on his computer. And in our opinion, he's been locked up way too long for an offense he now regrets and will never repeat. I very much want to visit him, but it's a major trip for us to go there. And when I send him a copy, I sent him a copy of my book, which has no child porn at all in it. The prison sent it back, saying they were not allowed to receive such gifts in the mail, a book. It's a sad situation for him to be so isolated from family for so long, and I hope he can successfully reintegrate into society upon his release next year after 10 years of family separation. Bob, I appreciate your thoughtfulness. I get that. I really do. Long time. Betty writes from Josephine County. Bill, so with your talk to the guest about prisons, I was at a Grants Pass City Council Chambers meeting years ago when they were going to consider building the State Oregon Youth Complex behind Walmart. One of the selling points was that it would be close to the now-defunct Greyhound bus station at the corner of Foothill and F Street. They were really pumping it up at this point as the family could come and visit often and such. Didn't take long for me to speak up and say if the parents were involved, 90% of the kids would not be in jail. And that went over well. You know, point being, though, is that remember that other caller, though, that said that there's about 30% of the kids just aren't wired right, though, have good parents, and that they're still kind of screwed up. I guess we can consider that, too, Betty. That's another side of that argument. Let me go to Todd. Hello, Todd. You wanted to talk about this, too. What's on your mind?
You know the answer to this. Why do jails and divorces cost so much?
Because they're worth it.
Exactly. But they do sometimes have a negative effect. I mean, I'm a big proponent of putting them out in the middle of the desert, like in the Mojave Desert. Mm. Pelican Bay is the maximum security prison in California. It's in Crescent City. A really negative effect on the local community is a lot of the prisoners, the worst of the worst, settle in that area. They're all on welfare anyway, and it's really had a negative effect on the community.
It has changed the demographics of Crescent City and Brookings, sure.
Oh, absolutely. Real quick story. So I went back to college about 25 years ago, made the acquaintance of a guy that had done petrochemical work and had worked in Saudi Arabia, and he really liked his experience living there. And he said, all of the maids are men. There are no women maids. Very conservative society, of course. He said, all of his jewelry, all of his gold would be laid out on the countertop. You never had to worry about anybody stealing anything. Because if you did, you knew they would chop off a hand. They were still doing that. So, I mean, I know that's severe and we would never do that in this society. But, you know, in Singapore, if you break the law, they'll have a public caning. It's a very law-abiding society. You just, you know, lay down the law a little bit, people get the message, and they keep in line.
I was wondering if we could do something, maybe not to the extent of caning and or, you know, cutting off of the hand, all right? What would you think, though, about the public shaming of the stocks, you know, that kind of thing? What do you think about that? I think there was a point to be made that, you know, public shame could be used more than it is right now.
Well, I've seen, you know, where people have taken their child who might have stolen something from the store and made him sit in the front yard with a sign saying, I stole something. And then the liberal news media just goes ballistic. How dare you shame your poor child?
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, that was good. Shame can be very powerful when properly applied. All right. Hey, be well. Thanks for that call. Todd, we'll talk again on Friday. Thanks again. This is-